Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, man.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. Everything good. I know you had that long call last week.
I was in L.A. For the last, 9 days, so I don't care about anything. I just wish
okay.
I was back in L.A. But you know how it is, man, girl stuff. Girls in long distance, it sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I've been okay. Been sick for most of the past 2 weeks.
Oh no.
Yeah, not super sick, just annoyingly sick, when you have a cold
yeah,
and
yeah.
Like not with a fever. Yes, it's just annoying more
yeah.
than anything else.
Are you taking some Halls or whatever, some cough drops and stuff?
I just don't like cough drops, so I probably mm-hmm. should be, but I'm not. I've been taking NyQuil and DayQuil and stuff, and then yesterday I was taking Benadryl just because it seemed more like an allergy than anything else.
Uh-huh.
But right now I'm not taking anything. I felt mostly fine all day. Now at night, of course, the coughs are starting to come back a little bit, but it's not too bad.
Yeah, that sucks. Yeah, that just happens sometimes seasonal. You usually get them in the wintertime.
Yeah, I was sick last Thanksgiving as well, so.
Oh, crap. That sucks.
Yeah.
Get your flu shot if you haven't already.
I do need to do that, actually. I've gotten one every year.
Yeah, it's not a bad idea. You'll probably, if you have allergies and stuff, you might be more prone to, keeping gunk in your lungs and fucking getting sick, so.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
I've had the flu before, and it's not fun, so.
Yeah, it is not fun. All right, so what do we want to talk about tonight?
I think what you have there on the little write-up, I think that's mostly
mm-hmm.
good. Talk about Pat Beverly's injury,
mm-hmm.
Just the Clippers' record and how, they're a game back of the eighth seed?
Damn, are they? Jeez.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
The West has not been good. So, yeah, Utah is 9-11. Clippers are 7-11. So, two wins
wow.
back, but it's one game. And then ahead of them, OKC
mm-hmm.
and the Lakers. And, the Lakers aren't going to make the playoffs. And OKC
wow.
looks horrible right now.
Yeah, but they'll be better, probably.
Yeah.
Yeesh. That's crazy. I didn't realize how close they were.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough because, when you look at the standings, Houston, Golden State, San Antonio, Minnesota, Portland are all probably pretty much locks. Denver
mm-hmm.
could fall a bit without Millsap, but
mm-hmm.
And I'm not super high on New Orleans, but you got to think Thunder will come up. So that really, that's 7 or 8 spots.
Yeah.
It'll be tough for the Clippers mm-hmm. to get in there. They need to win these easy games, and then they need Gallo and Teodosic to come back pretty soon.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, we could talk
all
about
right.
Record and standings and stuff, and then we should definitely talk about DJ, the trade rumors,
mm-hmm.
and then should they tank or should they make a run for it? Is it worth it?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a fair amount.
Cool.
Maybe touch on rotation stuff as well, but
yeah, we could probably open up with the Kings game a little bit since that's so fresh and Blake had a game winner. All right, and then we'll just kind of go from there. You can ask Twitter if they have any questions, too. We can maybe bookend with that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll give you a second to do that, and I'll get the intro going, and then we'll start up, okay?
All
This is the best place for me. This is a place where I want to start and finish my career. A long drought, a lot of unfinished business here.
What's up, everyone? It's the Love the Jam, the podcast, fresh off a Clipper win, 97-95 in Sacramento. Blake Griffin, another game winner, just another day, another dollar for Blake. Secretly clutch Blake Griffin, hitting a pretty tough fadeaway to win the game with about 3 seconds left yesterday. Let's just forget about the 10-0 run that preceded that, where Blake kind of fell over himself a couple times too. He's clutch. This game in Portland, that's enough evidence that you need. I got Rob here with me. How are you doing, Rob?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing?
All right. The Clippers won a couple of games, kind of made things a little bit less depressing after getting blown out by the New York Knicks. And, yeah. You know, this stretch, we kind of talked about last time we were on the pod, kind of in passing, that if the Clippers could kind of keep it together, that this week had a nice stretch of games, all seemed winnable. Obviously, the New York game didn't end up that way. But there they are, 7-11, just a game out of the eighth seed, remarkably. And looked all right for spurts in that Kings game, especially in that third quarter, where they seemed to erase an 18-point lead at will. Not that the Kings are some sort of offensive juggernaut, but they had kind of looked like it beforehand. They had 61 points in the first half and were getting points pretty easily. But, you know, they're pretty streaky, have young players. Buddy Hield pretty much was indicative of how that game went. He was kind of killing it early, kind of went dry, and then ended in a flurry. What did you make of that game, Rob, that Kings game? Did you get a chance to see it?
Yeah, I watched just about the entire thing, actually. It's interesting because on one hand, one game really can't say that much about a whole season. On the other hand, there are definitely games that can be turning points in a team season. And I wonder if this Clippers team ends up making a run towards the playoffs or even a run towards being like a pretty good team, I'd say like over 500, is this game kind of the turning point for that? They weren't playing horribly in the first half, but they weren't playing well either. And then all of a sudden in that third quarter, they just came out and they were locked down defensively. They were playing with so much energy, so much fire. And I haven't been one of the people who's been saying the Clippers have been loafing the past couple weeks. I wouldn't say that they've been like really slacking, but seeing that effort compared to the standard, it was crazy. And I mean, yeah, it's the Kings. They're not very good and they're prone to stretches of not scoring, but the Clippers look great on defense. And yeah, that kind of effort can't really translate to a whole game, but it was still nice to see that they can do that, especially since obviously Pat Beverly was not playing. So that was good to see. And I'm glad they were able to hold on for the win. That's the kind of game that they really need to win, even without Beverly and Gallinari and Tatum, which the Kings are just not good. And when you get a good night from Blake Griffin and you have pretty good nights from Lou Williams and Austin Rivers, you need to win a game.
Yeah.
And they were able to do so. So despite the Steph Curry-esque shooting of Buddy Hield down the stretch. But yeah, there was some promising stuff. And I think Doc really has been experimenting with the rotations a lot. And it's just tough for him. It's tough for fans, I know, because on different nights, different players are playing well. And like, obviously, like, yeah, different guys are good on different nights. But with the Clippers, it's just so weird because some nights Willie Reed looks amazing. But then against the Kings, Montrezl Harrell was playing so much better than him. Honestly, he was playing better than DJ too for a lot of the game. And just like, how does Doc choose on any given night whether to go with one or the other? Is it matchup based? Is it just, does he give each of them a few minutes? That kind of stuff is really interesting. Same with Deckers, look good, but also still has some really bad moments. He had like a couple of bad turnovers and he hasn't been shooting well yet, but he definitely looks a little more comfortable. Like, do you play him more? Mm-hmm. Juwan Evans didn't get minutes in the second half. He's looked a little bad defensively, actually. He's looked better on offense than defense, which is a little surprising. But just, like, a lot of questions about the rotation. But the good news is Blake Griffin looks good again. DJ's effort has turned up the past week or so. And the Austin Rivers-Lou Williams starting pairing definitely looks like it's bearing fruit. I love Sindarius Thornwell, but I don't think he's ready to be a starter in the NBA, which is – it's not a knock. He's a second-round rookie. But, yeah, the starting unit looked a lot better out there with Lou. What did you think about that and, like, the Sox rotations in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely think Austin Rivers and Lou Williams is the pairing to be right now with Milos out for now. 7 assists and 8 assists from Lou, from Austin and Lou. It's pretty impressive. Of course, they had their share of turnovers, but when you're handling the ball so much, I do like that the Clippers seem to be initiating a lot of those handoff pass-offs to start a lot of their offensive sets. I kind of like how that just gets people moving rather than people just kind of ball-watching. It's tough about, I think with Harrell and Reed, it's just, how do you ever know who is, like you just said, like, it's really hard to say. Like, sometimes I would think, for the longest time, I thought Willie Reed is slightly better than Montrezl Harrell. Like, Harrell is a great energy guy, and he's a great hustling player, but I always felt like Willie Reed just had more skills and was savvy enough defensively and had enough moves offensively that I kind of trusted him more. And I think Doc kind of felt that way initially, but then just with the team kind of losing its footing a bit, Harrell's been getting more opportunities, and he had a game leading plus 15 in this game. And it was obvious when he was on the floor, his energy is infectious. And it's just, I never really know who to play over who, and it's just really a mix and match sort of thing, and it's really hard to play them together unless you really have a certain matchup. So Wes Johnson has been great. I think he's been playing really well. He played well again yesterday. He had an incredible game the game before where he just couldn't miss. So, and he continued his good shooting last night. And, you know, Wes has been doing a lot of intangible things. I hope he keeps it up as when Gallo comes back, because he's been the Wes Johnson really most of the year. He's been that kind of impact player we sort of expected him to be all along, and he's had some good games. So as far as the rotations go, it's just, I mean, still everybody except for DeAndre as far as the starters went, and DeAndre had some foul problems, played pretty heavy minutes. Everyone played over 36 minutes, with Blake and Wes playing 38.5 and about 39.5 each. So it's still been a bit heavy and just kind of cutting around the edges as far as CJ Williams and Evans and Reed is finding out who to play. It was nice to see Decker have that one really nice drive to the basket, but that guy just still seems like he has no idea where he's going ever. And it's just really, it can be frustrating because he has the skill, he has the tools to be a solid rotation player. He's getting a little bit more comfortable. But Decker kind of drives me crazy because that's like the kind of guy we need on this team. It just feels like he's still kind of lagging as far as where to go and where to be and just like how to be a basketball player at times. And it's kind of frustrating. But aside from that, you can't really fault Doc with his rotations. I do wish that we always had either Lou Williams or Blake Griffin on the floor at all times. And Doc did have times when neither were on the floor, and I think Sindarius Thornwell and Juwan Evans might have been in during that second quarter when the Kings kind of spread their lead a bit and before Blake came back and cut into it, and then they had, of course, that little flurry that brought it back up to 14. I think Lou Williams or Blake Griffin should probably be on the floor at all times with this team as is, just to have an offensive presence. Aside from that, I mean, he's just, beggars can't be choosers, and we don't have that many options on this team right now. Not really having too much of an issue with Doc. In fact, these are two pretty good games that we just saw. So not too frustrated. We mentioned briefly about the record. The Clippers are 7-11. The Utah Jazz are 9-11, and currently in the eighth spot. But with Patrick Beverley being out for the season with microfracture surgery, it's just really it's a tough break for Pat. Do we think this is a playoff team? Can this team make the playoffs? Should we make the playoffs? Can this team realistically, without Pat Beverley, really hang? Is it worthwhile to even make a push? Like, I'm not quite so sure. And considering the injury pedigree we have on this team already between Milos and Gallo and Blake, of course, it's just how realistic do we think the playoffs are at this point? What do you think, Rob?
I would say it's unwise to expect the playoffs, but I also don't think they're completely out of the question. When you look at the West standings, there's five or six teams that seem like just about playoff locks. Really, it's the last two spots that are up for grabs. Right now, that's New Orleans and Utah. New Orleans, they have talent, but they're also shaky. They have nobody outside of their top three players. If one of them they're done. Even if one of them doesn't get hurt, they might still fall apart due to lack of shooting or just Cousins complaining about something, creating a toxic locker room like he's done the past 8 years of his career. Whatever it is, I don't really trust them. Eighth is Utah, which they don't have Rudy Gobert. And even with Gobert, I just don't know how they score consistent buckets. Donovan Mitchell looks great. But outside of that, like Ricky Rubio has not played well this season. And Alec Burks is still a shell of his what he was a few years ago. And Dante Exum is out for the year. I don't know with them. And that leaves two spots. And right now, ahead of the Clippers are the Lakers, which they've been surprisingly good this year, but I still think the Clippers have more talent, if healthy, big if. And then Oklahoma City, who they've been horrible, but you got to think they turn things around pretty soon. So theoretically, if Oklahoma City grabs one of those two, Clippers could get the last spot. The bottom of the West is horrible, and Memphis I don't think is really very good either. So if the Clippers are healthy, even without Pat Beverley, I think there's a solid chance that they make the eighth spot. Not a great chance, but a not impossible chance. The issue is when exactly Gallinari and Tadosic get healthy. Because, as we've talked about, they're in the middle of a really easy stretch. They have Lakers at home tomorrow, and then Utah, again, at home on Thursday with 2 days rest. That's a lot. Then at Dallas, not very good on Saturday. But after that, the rest of December is brutal. At Minnesota, at home against Minnesota, at home against Washington, at home against Toronto, at Washington, at Miami, at San Antonio. And then the last week or so is a little easier, but you still have at Houston. That's a really tough schedule. The Clippers won't be favored in just about any of those games, probably, unless those other teams get injured or completely fall apart.
John Wall is out again, probably for
what? Oh, John Wall. Is out. Yeah, but
yeah.
He might be back by then, though. That'll be really close. If he is back, Washington will be a huge favorite. Even without him, that's pretty close, I'd say. Maybe an edge to the Clippers at home. Definitely a minus on the road when Wall should be back on the second half. But yeah, I mean, those could all be losses. And even if the Clippers win the next three, that'll be 10-11. If they go 1-8 in their next nine, that basically pushes them out of the playoffs. And I think that kind of record is realistic if Gallinari and Tadosic don't come back. And right now, things are really hazy with them. Gallinari is – there have been varying reports on, like, he'll come back next week or he's two or three games away, but there's very little concrete. There's nothing about him practicing or – taking contact or anything. So I am not super optimistic about him. And Tadosic, same thing, that he was in a walking boot a few weeks ago, but like I don't think he's returned to on-court activities either. And with an injury like his, he'd need to do a pretty substantial amount of getting into shape because he's been off his feet. I'd say Gallinari could come back in like a week or two. Tadosic, which I'm guessing is still weeks away. And by the time that happens, the Clippers could be out of it. So I'd like to think that they can, but they really need to bear through this opening early to mid-December stretch, they need to win a couple of these games against better teams. And they can do it. If Blake Griffin goes off, if Austin and Lou are hot, and they just play decent defense, they can do it. But will they? We don't know. I'm still hopeful. I wrote, you know, 2 weeks ago now just about that it wasn't time to panic. And then Beverly got injured, and I was pretty panicked. But the West being so bad has really opened up a door for them. The question, really, I think, is more not even can they make the playoffs, it's should they bother making the playoffs. What do you think about the whole making the playoffs is like, I mean, they couldn't possibly be better than a seventh seed, and that's being optimistic. Is that worth it? Should they just tank for a good draft pick? I don't know, honestly. I mean, what do you think about that? And tying into that, like the DeAndre Jordan trade rumors and all that stuff.
It's really tough to say, like you were saying. I think I would – you know, I want to enjoy watching the Clippers play this year. I mean, I'm in Iowa right now, and I work all the time. And when I come home, I want to watch the Clippers play. So it would really be a boon to me to have a good Clipper team. So selfishly, I would like the Clippers to be good just for that reason. And watching a tanking team, I'm all too familiar with, and it's easy to kind of, you know, take games off and not really care about certain losses if the team sucks. But I mean, as far as the future goes, you kind of have to sort of side with the idea of tanking and trading DJ now for assets as far as what should this team do. They're 7-11 right now. They're not terrible, but they're not particularly great as we've seen these last, you know, dozen or so games. And it's sort of rough. When I look at the West, to me, objectively, and this obviously, this isn't completely objectively, but when I look at the teams, I kind of feel like, you know, those teams you listed should be in. I feel like Denver, New Orleans, and OKC, just based on their talent, should round out the West. And the Lakers, the Clippers, the Grizzlies, the Clippers specifically without Beverly. With Beverly, I think they would be a surefire playoff team. But without him, I sort of feel like Denver, New Orleans, even as dysfunctional as they are, they still have Boogie, and they still have Davis, and Drew Holiday is still a pretty good player, and Tyreke Evans has been playing well for them. So as dysfunctional as they can be, I still feel like they would have enough top-heavy talent to pull them through. I think Utah is kind of a mess without Gobert, and it's just sort of a mess in general as far as offensively goes. And I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped out. But New Orleans, OKC, and Denver on paper all seem like they're a bit better than the Clippers. So without Beverly, even when healthy. So I sort of feel like those teams should round out the top eight, as bad as the bottom of the West has been. So honestly, I would probably side a little bit between a little bit of tanking maybe to sort of get a better pick and to kind of prepare for next season. Because really, say we get the eighth seed and then we just get destroyed by Golden State and it's just like 2 weeks of Clippers can't beat the Warriors means. Is it really worth it? Like, am I really down to just get like my ego destroyed some more by Warriors fans? I don't know. I don't know how into a sweep I would be. If the Clippers could get the seventh seed, you know, and maybe get into a matchup against a team like the Spurs, that would be great. But I don't think the Clippers are really – I think the Clippers are more of an eighth seed without Beverly. And I think that – I actually do kind of feel like there's going to be sort of a round robin as far as who hits that eighth seed. And I feel like the Clippers aren't going to be able to get there. Like, honestly, just – on paper without Beverly and just with assumed injuries to Blake for maybe a stretch of 5 to 10 games, it just feels like a lot to absorb. And Beverly is probably has been this team's essentially maybe second best player through the season. So he's just a huge, huge, huge loss. And it did sort of take the the wind out of my Clipper sails. So it's pretty much how I stand there. I know, yeesh.
But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I think that I wouldn't bet on the Clippers making the playoffs. And I haven't done a ton of draft research yet. I know the top of the draft is considered very good, but I don't know if the Clippers could be bad enough as long as they have Blake.
Yeah,
and
true.
Presumably Gallinari, because I don't know if they're going to be able to trade him. As long as they have those two and don't trade, like, all of their rotation players, like, I don't think they're going to be as bad as, like, the Bulls or the Hawks or the Suns or the Kings even. So, I mean, maybe they get, like, the sixth or seventh worst record, but...
Mm-hmm. And then they draft Kyrie Irving and then everything is good?
Yeah. I wouldn't be opposed to that. The question is, then comes to how would a DeAndre Jordan trade work? Because I've been thinking about it, and there's really only a few teams that make sense. And of those teams, I just don't know if there's a realistic package that works for both. And it's just tough because he's really good, but centers are also not super valuable in today's NBA. The non-unicorn type, like Porzingis or Anthony Davis, or those type of players who can shoot threes and protect the rim and do everything, kind of. Even Jordan, who's kind of in that second valuable tier of athletic rim runners and rim protectors, a lot of teams have centers or don't really think they need an all-star center. And of teams that would, his contract is up, and it would basically be a rental. So it has to be teams who are pretty good or think they could be pretty good with Jordan, and that really lowers it a lot. And I mean, DJ is really the domino that needs to fall, I think, because if they trade him, they're not going to trade him for another good player. They're trading him for assets. And losing Jordan in addition to Beverly would tank the defense. Like, they'd probably still have a pretty good offense, but their defense would be one of the worst in the league. And like, I don't know who they trade him to, and if it would be worth it.
Do you want to give DeAndre Jordan the max?
I don't think he would ask for the max. I mean, I think that he might want it, but if he's being realistic, like, I don't know what other team would offer him a max. He's, what is he now? He's 29-ish? Yeah, he's 29. He's going to turn 30 this summer. He's been in the NBA for a long time. He has, like, a lot of miles on him, even though he didn't play that much his first few years. I mean, he's been an Iron Man the past 5 or 6 years. Played a ton of minutes, decent amount in the playoffs. He's played in, FIBA competition. I just, like, once his athleticism starts going, he's a backup center. He's basically, if he loses his top-tier athleticism, he's roughly a less strong offensive version of Willie Reed, and that's just not super valuable. It doesn't look like his athleticism is going anywhere anytime soon, but that kind of stuff can be very just, you hit a cliff and it's gone. I don't know who would offer him a max. I think he's going to get a lot. But I don't know if he'd demand a full max because he would be eligible for a lot of money.
I don't know if he's going to get a full max, but this is going to be a good contract for DJ. And it'll probably be his last contract. He goes like his last like upper level contract. And the Clippers already have what, like about $30 million and $20 million in Gallo and Blake next year.
Mm-hmm.
That's already $50 million. And Teodosic, I think, is maybe on the thing for six. West is for six. So things kind of add up. And if we give DJ a near max contract, it's pretty much going to be our cap space right there. And I don't know. I don't know anymore. Like, I love DJ. And I think he's fantastic. I think he's going to end up being very underrated as a Clipper. Whenever he leaves, nobody's gonna appreciate DJ. One thing I kind of remember just seeing DJ on the bench. I think it was Decker that had that dunk. DJ is a great bench player. Like, he's so great at hyping whoever's on the bench, telling everybody to get up. The one lone glaring exception being that Spurs game in Game 7. But aside from that, DJ has always been such a great hype man. He's a great teammate. I don't think anybody in the world dislikes him because he seems to be like the friendliest dude.
Yeah.
And yep. I love DJ. I don't want people to think like that I'm saying that DJ isn't a worthwhile player. He's been the backbone of this defense forever. The dude, I still think DeAndre Jordan is one of the scariest people James Harden sees in general. Like, I feel like if when James Harden sees DeAndre Jordan in the paint, for a guy who's completely unstoppable, I still think James Harden pauses and thinks twice about a player like DeAndre Jordan. And that's an asset in itself. Like, a lot of people gave J.J. Redick a lot of credit in that Houston series. It was really just a lot of back defense from DJ that scared Harden from really hitting the rim. And he's just invaluable in that kind of situation. Being that second line of defense, he's fantastic. But when I think about him and his deficiencies and the fact that we already have all this guaranteed money already tied up, it's really tough for me to say pay the man. And if we can get a high pick from him, even if it is the Nets pick and maybe it's 5 or so, I think I would do it right now. That plus it would tank the Clippers. We would have 2 good picks going into next year. Blake is still young. You know, Gallo, we just sort of have to deal with, but we only have 2 more years of him, even if, say, everything goes south, which, you know, it might not be. Gallo is still a nice player. Austin Rivers, I think he has a player option going into next year, so maybe he's going to try and bat for a higher payday. We'll see. But either way, that would essentially leave a lot of our cap just tied in Blake and Gallo, and we would have pieces around them. And two high draft picks, it seems like the smartest thing to do. And I hate to say it, but that's sort of where I am now. I'm still going to enjoy watching this Clipper team because I love watching Blake Griffin, and I hope he's healthy. And I'm sure Milos, as long as he can come back, will make this team a lot of fun. But ultimately, if I had to swing one side or the other, I think I would swing a little bit towards the idea of trading DJ for you know, if we can get that Tristan Thompson Nets pick package, I'm good with that. Like, I'm okay with that. It'll get our pick higher. We'll get a pick from the Nets. We'll have 2 high picks along with Blake to build around. It just seems like the smartest idea. I don't know. It's tough to say because I hate rooting for losing because I've been spoiled by the Chris Paul era. But at this point, that's kind of where I am. What do you think?
Well, the issue I have is I don't think the Cavs would give up the Nets pick for DJ.
Yeah,
I think
if that's the case,
Tristan,
this is all moot. Yeah.
Yeah, if I think it would be like Tristan and Iman Shumpert and maybe one of their random young guys who's, you know, a bottom tier prospect, like the Chetty Osman, who's this Turkish, I think he's a small forward. He's not bad, but he's a throw in. And I'm guessing it would be a future first-round pick. I don't think they get the next pick for DJ, not for rental, not against the Warriors. I mean, the other trades, the Cavs are definitely one. The other trades would be the Wizards, maybe. I mean, there's no way. A year or two ago, you might have asked for Beal or Otto Porter. That is not happening anymore. I mean, it would be Kelly Oubre, Marcin Gortat as a fill-in.
Yeah. No thanks.
And maybe like one of their like throw in prospects as well as like a future protected first. Like I don't know. I mean, I kinda like Oubre, but eh. And then like the Bucks might be the closest, centered around either Jabari Parker or Brogdon. I don't know if the Bucks do that because I know they love both of those guys. And DJ isn't necessarily a great fit with Giannis, but I mean, those are the only 3 teams I can really think of right now, barring a dark horse candidate that could use or has somewhat assets for a DJ trade. And if you can get the Nets pick, I think they should do it. The other thing with DJ, though, which is much more of a meta, really impossible to quantify, which is something we talked about this summer, actually, when JJ and Chris Paul and Blake were heading into free agency, is how much is it worth to keep a fan base and keep players who fans have built relations with and who they've grown up with. I mean, I'm guessing there's a lot of people. DJ is probably underappreciated by most Clippers fans, by most NBA fans, but I'm guessing like he's a fun player. He's exciting. He seems nice. I bet he's a lot of young fans' favorite player, and lots of people have grown up with him as a Clippers starting center. How valuable is it to keep that and keep those fans? And I mean, Blake Griffin, having Blake Griffin locked up is awesome, but having Blake and DJ, even if it's not necessarily the best basketball move, might be better for the franchise in a way.
Yeah.
I don't know how true that is. I'm not somebody who works, you know, I'm obviously not in some team's marketing analytics department or something where they have that kind of data, maybe if there isn't even is that data. I think it's worth something. Is it worth being mediocre instead of getting a draft pick or a young solid prospect? I don't know. This is tough. I think if the Nets pick is available, I do think the Clippers would have to pull on that. Probably a top. That's almost certainly a top seven pick, and I think you have to do that for a soon to be 30-year-old center on a team that doesn't really have much. But honestly, I mean, I think the bigger issue is Gallo's contract, where like he's played what, like 7 or 8 games this year, and even though they look horrible on offense without him, he also didn't look that good. The threat of his offense and playmaking was more valuable than what he was actually doing, which, I mean, there's something to be said for that, but is it worth $20 million? I don't know. You have to pay him next year, and then the year after is partial, but I honestly wonder if trying to dump Gallo and then paying DJ and trying to convince him not to take a full max or even close to it and trying to get him at a discount might not be better than trading DJ and rocking with Gallo for another year or two. Again, that's providing anybody wants Gallinari for $20 million for a year and a half. I don't know. It's tricky. I do not envy the Clippers front office. It's a really tough situation. I think that they're probably going to let them run for another month or so before they make any moves. But unless things get really bad, unless this upcoming stretch just they look horrible and they're getting blown out every night, maybe they make a trade. But I'm not sure we're going to see anything until Gallinari and Tadosic get back. Because this team is just – it's incomplete without those guys. I'm going to write about it, and it's going to go up Tuesday. But, I mean, it's not that either of them are necessarily all-stars. Gallinari's – was close a few years ago. Tadosic is obviously basically unknown still, despite how much we think he means to this team. But, I mean, the ball movement and the passing and overall playmaking just is not there. Not in terms of creating for others anyway on a consistent basis. And it's not going to get there unless those guys get healthy. And I think the Clippers front office understands the Doc is limited right now, and the Clippers players themselves don't have a ton to work with. So I think they're going to get some time. But again, if it's a month from now and they're 12-20 and Gallinari is back but still doesn't look great and Tadosic is still out, I mean, all bets are off. I would not be surprised by just about anything. The only thing I don't think will happen is a Blake Griffin trade.
Yeah.
But I think everybody else on the roster is available. Like, I think, obviously, I'm sure they like Thornwell and Evans and the other young guys, but, like, if they can get trade several of them for a better asset, I think they do it. Yeah, I think everybody is on the table except Blake Griffin. I'd honestly be very wary to trade Patrick Beverley, even though I know he's out for the year. I think they have him for next year really cheap. And I think he's the kind of guy you want to that they could get on a discount and kind of age with him as a rotation, a solid, just sturdy veteran point guard presence. But I'd say he might honestly be the second most, not valuable, but second least likely to be traded. What do you think? I think everybody but Blake could be gone by the end of this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you about Pat. I don't think the Clippers should move him. Even with something like microfracture and surgery, and I Pat's had issues with his knees in the past, and it's scary. He's such a tenacious defender, and, you know, lockdown defense is so important with lateral movement and all that jazz, and it's really rough to see such a great defender have to have knee surgery, but I definitely think that he's an affordable piece. It definitely feels like, I don't feel like Beverly is going to particularly be looking for some crazy payday. He's only going to be, what, 30 mm-hmm. maybe next year? So he definitely has years left on his mileage. I love Patrick Beverly. Like, I can't believe he's only been playing for us for like a dozen games, because I feel like I've become so attached to him so quickly. So
yeah,
I definitely hope that he sticks around. And I agree with you. When I look down the roster, DeAndre, he's already in trade rumors. Gallinari, I mean, if it comes to as far as like which big contract you want to pair with Griffin, there's arguments for DJ and there's arguments for Gallinari. Ooh. And both are perfectly reasonable. Rivers, you know, the guy's going to want a payday next year. I'm not particularly, you know, keen on Austin. I like what he's done for the team, but he has obvious flaws and he's a fringe starter at best. Lou Williams is an expiring. Milos has a very friendly deal if he can come back and show his worth. Wes Johnson, you know, I thought that contract was untradeable, but he's playing pretty well right now, and he's actually showing that he's a rotation player. He can be one of those throw-ins. Decker, obviously, is a cheap get. Harrell, Reed, all these guys are cheap players. Maybe nobody will want Bryce Johnson ever because he's trash, but aside from that... the entire team is fairly tradable right now. It's tough. It's a really weird situation. I think in a week, even in a couple of weeks, we'll have a more of an idea of what direction this team is going. But right now, it's really a crossroads where you could kind of pick your destiny and kind of, you know, I think if we can get a lottery pick for DJ, it's a no-brainer. If we can get a first rounder, even in the teens, I would still think about it, just because losing DJ would help our pick so much. And it's tough. It's really tough. And I hate coming to this place because I was so hopeful just a few weeks ago. But yeah, it's kind of where we are. And it's a shame. It's a shame because I think this team could have been really, really good. Like, I think this team could have challenged for home court if they were healthy. But unfortunately, you know, you have to go with the odds sometimes, and the team had a lot of injury prone players on the mm-hmm. team, and unfortunately it reared its ugly head before we even knew it. How about Blake Griffin? Is Blake Griffin actually a clutch basketball player, or was he just kind of fortunate to hit that shot against the Kings?
I mean, that was a lucky shot. That was a horrible shot. When you look,
it was a bad shot.
He left 3 seconds on the clock. He passed up a better look to dribble into, like, it was a contested fall away, like 15-footer from a bad angle over a really tall player. Like, I mean, obviously it's not completely luck. It's Blake Griffin. I mean, he's going to be a Hall of Fame basketball player. But, I mean, that was a horrid shot. If he had missed that, the criticism on him would have been through the roof. That's one of those things where results trump process, and now it's like, oh, Blake hit the game winner, instead of what on earth was Blake doing on that possession? What were the Clippers doing on that possession? Yeah, it's... I don't even know. As for the clutch thing, I don't necessarily think he's had an unclutch reputation for a while. I don't necessarily think he's unclutch, but I just think just by how the positions work, it's tougher for big men to get off good shots by themselves. They need to be set up more in the post. Even a guy like Blake, who has good handles and can shoot now, he's realistically, if a guy's playing up on him towards the end of the game and there's help, and you know he's not going to pass it to Wes Johnson or DeAndre Jordan with the game on line, it's just not going to happen. You can shade help towards him. It's tough for him to get a good look. I honestly would have let Lou Williams take it. But I just think it's tough, especially because Griffin expends so much energy with the way he plays. I think by the end of fourth quarters, he's often very tired. And it's not really that he's not clutch, it's just that he's fatigued, which could be a conditioning issue, but who knows. And then he definitely has a tendency to tense up, but so does everybody on the Clippers, apparently, except for maybe Lou. It's been that way for years now. It was that way even with who we thought was cool, calm, and collected, Chris Paul. They still always drop the ball. I don't know if he's clutch. I don't think he's super unclutch either, but it was a good thing he hit that shot, because it would have been ugly if he'd not hit that, because there's no way they were winning that game in overtime. There is not a chance. I don't really know. What did you think about the shot? Hello? 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 Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Hello? Hello?
Yo.
So, so.
Okay. So I think I can fix, I mean, if it happens again, I can kind of work around it just by reconnecting, like ending my call and then reconnecting. Anyways, should we just start at that Blake shot and then get into questions and then call it a day?
Yeah. So I think
okay. Let's
just edit out whatever. Should I start from the question? We should probably just, I don't even remember what the question was. How about?
I was asking if Blake is suddenly clutch, and then you were essentially like, "Oh, that was a lucky shot," and then we were just going off of that.
Okay.
I don't know where to start. I don't know how we should edit that. Let's see. I can just ask you again.
Yeah, just do the exact same thing again. So we'll edit out all the stuff up until then, and then yeah, we'll just start in like. What, like 10 seconds or so, just ask basically a similar question. I'll just
perfect,
start.
Perfect, perfect. Okay. All right, I'm going to start. Okay, so is Blake Griffin actually secretly clutch? Is this a thing? What do you think, Rob?
I'd say no. I think that he's not as unclutch as people have made him out to be. I think that he doesn't really choke so much as he gets tired and he forces things. And yeah, I mean, that kind of is choking a little bit, but I think he can make shots and make plays. The problem in the Chris Paul era was that I think there was just so much pressure and it was just dialed up to 11 and it was just tough for him. And now it's that he doesn't have much help out there on the court and everybody can really focus on him. So I don't necessarily think he's unclutch. I also don't think he's the clutchest player of all time. I think part of that has to do with being a big man in that big men generally are set up by point guards or wings or whoever has the ball. Even Blake, who's the lead scorer and playmaker for the Clippers, he doesn't usually get the ball at the top of the key and then just create. And he can do that, but it's tough, especially against a set defense, especially at the end of games when that's what they're waiting for. And he's not some point guard with amazing handles who can shake loose really easily. He's either going to go around somebody, drive through somebody, or take an open shot. And it's tough for him to just create space by himself. And we saw that with this shot, which was honestly, it was a horrible shot.
Yeah.
Just horrible. If he'd missed that, the conversation is completely different. He left 3 seconds on the clock when he didn't need to for them to, for the Kings to score again. It was a contested mid-range shot against a good defender who had really lengthy and Willie Cauley's time. I can't say it's luck because this is Blake Griffin. This is an all-star, a Hall of Fame player probably. It's not luck, but it was a fortunate shot, I should say, and it was a really bad process. The Clippers didn't run any play. At the end of the game, Griffin was just like, yeah, Doc called up an ISO. That's all it was, And a lot of teams don't run plays because even though plays have a higher chance to get guys open, there was also a higher chance of a miscommunication and turnover or whatever. But it just was not – it was not a great process. And I wouldn't say that he's unclutch, but I don't know. I really didn't like that the end of that fourth quarter. It's exactly what's been going on the past few weeks where – they just tensed up and they stopped running their offense and just started ISOing and doing simple pick and rolls and not getting any ball movement or any switches. And I don't know what it is, if they're in their own heads or if it's just a talent thing or what, but it's tough. I think you kind of have to go with Blake because he's your best player, but honestly, at the end of games, I think I'd trust Lou Williams a little bit more.
Yeah.
So, to be fair, Garrett Temple was doing a really good job on him defensively, I would have just gone with Lou, to be honest. I'd run a Lou Blake pick and roll or Lou DJ pick and roll and just see what Lou could do. But the Clippers ended up winning, so it's tough to really complain.
Yeah, they were up 95-85, but it works when you win by two, you win by one, you win by 20, whatever. That was a bad shot. That wasn't a great shot. It wasn't a great sequence the last 3 minutes or so when the Clippers went up by 10. Would have been really frustrating to lose that game, especially against Buddy Hield again. It would have brought up all those memories of last year's just epic collapse. I don't know. Maybe the team is just used to watching Chris Paul down this stretch of games, and like running plays is kind of a foreign thing. I don't know. It's a weird thing. It's sort of strange. And like you said, running plays sometimes necessarily doesn't get you with the player you want, with the defender you want, particularly as well intentioned as they might seem. But it was not a great showing down the stretch for the Clippers again. And I feel like the Clippers haven't had many particularly good showings. Even the Portland game was kind of poor form. The Utah game, I guess, was all right as far as the ending went. But that's about it, really. The other games were blowouts. The Clippers won, and the other games they pretty much lost, and most of them down the stretch. So it's been a frustrating finish for the Clippers. And Blake Griffin still very much, to me, has a reputation for tensing up way too much down the stretch, and he's going to have to earn the right to say that that's not a knock against his game, because he's very much, it's not the first time that Blake has had a turnover with less than 3 minutes left in the game. And I believe he did down the stretch in this game too. So hopefully that can be something that's rectified a bit, because we all know how good Blake is, but he has kind of had this reputation of being somebody who gets tight to close games, and he's going to have to go against that mold a bit. We got any Twitter questions, Rob?
Yeah, we only have two today. One of them is a two-parter though. The first is by, C. Berba, which is, why don't we cut to the basket more when Blake is doubled? Decker West, Austin Sin can all finish at the rim. They should cut more, but cutting isn't – it's not just something where you can just be like, cut more. Guys need to be good at cutting, need to have the space to make cuts. It's a lot more complicated than just – I hate and pick up basketball – when people are just like, cut, cut. It's like, you can't just cut. It doesn't work like that. Like, a lot of the times if you cut, like, it congests the lane. It's complicated. And they probably should theoretically cut more, because they really don't cut very much. But it's impossible to just tell the team, okay, cut more. Sin Darius, I think, has the makings of a good cutter. He has a sense of timing and he can finish, but like Austin Rivers is just not a guy who I think cuts the basket very much. It's a skill. Wes Johnson, like, Decker maybe haven't seen enough of him, but I don't know. I mean, it's one of those things where, like, ideally, yes, they should cut more, but it's not something you can just ask for a team to do.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even seen Sam Decker move competently when the ball is in his hands, let alone when it's not in his hands. So it's kind of a lot for me to be like, well, the guy can finish at the rim. Why doesn't he cut more? You have to be – I mean, I've played, you know, limited pickup. I'm sure Rob has too. We're not NBA players, obviously. But you're not going to be able to – you have to go north to south to cut. And it's really hard to do that when you have a defender in front of you. Like, you have to really be able to feel the guy coming off of you and having that space to get into the lane. Maybe we've been spoiled because we had Matt Barnes, who was fantastic at this, and Luke Mbamute even, who got much, much better at cutting and feeling when this guy was coming off of him. So the last few seasons, we've actually been kind of spoiled with guys who know how to cut, know when to cut, and keep improving in that way. I feel like the best we might have right now, maybe Wes can do it at times. I've seen him cut at times. I definitely agree with you that Sindarius Thornwell seems the kind of guy that has a nose for the rim and can cut when he has that sort of instinctual feel, but it's not an easy thing. And people and teams purposely won't leave good cutters you know, like they would if it's Matt Barnes and he's the Clippers' fifth option, and you can get burned that way because Matt Barnes is good at cutting to the rim. But if you have a team that has a G League player out there and two rookies, you know, you can cheat off of them because they don't know how to do those things just yet. They they probably got by a lot of college just by being bigger and physically more gifted than everybody else. The cutting is a very subtle skill, and it's not as easy as saying, why don't you cut more off a double? Why don't you just pout? You know, it's not that easy, unfortunately. Maybe it's something that our new guys will kind of get a feel to coming off of Blake, and that would be nice, but it's not as easy as saying, hey, cut. You know, your guy's doubling, getting doubled off of you, cut to the rim. It might make things even worse if you just kind of haphazardly dive to the basket without really knowing what's going on, you know, especially if the double is coming off from a certain place. Like if the double is coming off from the weak side or something, you know, they might want you to throw that pass across court to the guy from the corner trying to cut to the rim, because those passes aren't very successful. So there's a lot of variables to it. You know, maybe our swing guys will get more chemistry and more instincts as far as when to cut, like Sundarius Thornwell, maybe even Wes, even though it's kind of hard to expect a 29, 30-year-old Wes Johnson to learn new tricks. But I definitely think Thornwell will be able to be one of those players who maybe gets it a little bit easier as far as when to cut and when not to, especially if his three-point shot comes around and keeps kind of progressing. Like, hopefully it can, because I feel like he's shooting it with confidence. What else we got?
There's only one other question. It is a two-parter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's from Taylor Darnell. How much more effectively do you think Blake could be used, example, running pick and rolls? And the second part, do you think Doc getting fired is even conceivable if, say, the team goes on another long losing streak? So first thing, I think Blake could be used a little more effectively. I think that this is where Tadosic and Gallinari hurts. Tadosic is somebody, obviously, who'd be running the pick and roll and getting Blake and hitting those nice pocket passes and lobs and stuff that nobody else on the team can get. And Gallinari is somebody who Blake could actually run the pick and roll with, and Gallo could run it too, but Blake and Gallo could force switches and then take advantage with post-ups or off the dribble or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And both those guys are just, they're good offensive players. And I think Blake could be used off the pick and roll more. He's good in the post. He's improved a lot there, but it's just not an option in the NBA right now that's generally super effective and will lead to really high scoring offenses. But yeah, I mean, he's not also a guy where, like, he has good handles for a big man. He's improved his outside shot. But you can't just give him the ball and be like, okay, like, create. Sometimes that'll work, but a lot of the times that won't work, especially with some of the bad spacing they have on the floor. So I think that they could be used, he could be used a little more creatively. I think he could be used off the ball a little bit more. I honestly wonder if they should set some more off-ball picks and screens for him, kind of run him around a little bit. The issue with that is then he might get more tired. But I'm definitely not of a proponent of just giving him a ball at the elbow like 20 times a game or in the post 15 feet from the basket, because it just doesn't seem like a great strategy. But at the same time, he has some limitations, and this Clippers roster has some limitations. And then for the second half, Doc getting fired, it's conceivable. Like, and that's a big word. I mean, Pop getting fired is inconceivable. I cannot imagine that. I can see Doc getting fired. It would have to be a pretty long losing streak, I think. Like, if they lost another, like, 10 to 15 in a row, and not just lose, but are, like, getting blown out in a lot of them, and just the fight is gone, maybe. Like, it could happen. I would be surprised. I would not bet money on him getting fired. I think they're going to ride out the year with him. I don't think he'll be coaching the team next year. I think they're going to come with some kind of buyout or some mutual agreement, because I just think they're going in different paths. But I really don't think he's going to get fired. I don't think he's been bad. I don't understand. Three of his starters have been injured. He's been playing second round rookies. He's been playing young guys, which people have been criticizing him forever about doing. Most players on the team are playing around what we expected, if not better. Blake's been a little up and down. DJ's been up and down. But outside of that, most players have been playing how we'd want them to. He's not the greatest coach in the NBA. He really isn't, but he's a fine NBA coach. And I think there are arguments to be made that if you want this team to tank and you want to move in that direction, he's not the guy for that. And he would probably agree with you. But in terms of just getting the team to win, I don't know if there's a coach out there who would make this team substantially better than Doc has. I don't know if that guy is out there who could take over a team midseason all of a sudden. This roster's getting wins. I don't see that. But what do you think about those two separate questions?
Yeah, I mean, as far as Doc goes first, we've talked about this before, and I understand the frustration when the losses pile up. If the Clippers go through another 10-game losing streak, 9-game losing streak, you know, Doc will definitely be on the hot seat just because the coach is usually the first one to be scapegoated if that sort of issue comes up. But there's nothing I'm not really upset with Doc. I don't think Doc is the reason this team is not succeeding. I don't think Doc is a bad coach. I think he's a good motivator. I think the players play for him. I think a few hot takes out there have been that the team has quit on Doc. I don't think that's true. I don't see that. I actually think the opposite. I think the team is trying its best. Aside from the Knicks game, the team has been in every game in the fourth quarter. I want to say the team had a lead in virtually every fourth quarter that they lost, except for maybe the Warriors and the Knicks. Even the Charlotte game, they had a very brief lead. So the team is trying. It's just not very talented. So as far as the other question goes, as far as more creativity with Blake and running pick and rolls with Blake, or just running Blake even off the ball, like Rob was mentioning. There was a play that the Clippers ran very early, I think, in this Kings game. It's a very pet play that they always love to run, with Blake essentially getting a pick off the baseline and catching the ball and essentially having an easy layup at the rim. It's something that they used to always run during the Gentry years, and it would get them easy baskets all the time. And they ran it again against the Kings early on, and teams are smarter about it now. Mm-hmm. Teams know that Doc likes that play, and probably Tyronn Lue and maybe Gentry might even run that play often enough with their bigs. But they kind of snuff it out, and that used to be a play that was an automatic basket out of a timeout, and it's not anymore. And whether it be execution or whatever, or personnel, that, you know, there's certain plays that maybe ran a little bit crisper in the Chris Paul era. And there's just personnel. Like, I remember when J.J. Redick, whenever Chris Paul was injured, Blake and J.J. had a nice little two-man game where Blake would have handoffs and screens at the top of the key or so, and J.J. would run off a curl, and it was beautiful. And they ran it a lot in the Houston series too, and that kind of stuff is what you would want to see. But we don't have somebody to run off curls like J.J. Redick. And if you want to see more Gallinari, Blake Griffin pick and rolls, you'll see it, because we got a ton of it when Gallinari was injured, especially down the stretch in games. I remember that Portland game was almost entirely Blake Griffin and Gallinari pick and rolls. So you'll see plenty of it. If you want to see Gallo come back and see more creativity as far as Blake Griffin coming off of screens, and like, that's, you know, I can't even fault it so much, because you want to involve your two best offensive players in pick and rolls. And when that was happening, I thought it was super redundant and like, oh, they can see this from a mile away. But at the same time, it's a kind of a pick your poison type of deal. So when Gallo comes back, we'll see plenty of that, I'm sure. And that'll open things up a little bit more for Blake, because all he really has right now is the elbow and maybe Lou Williams pick and rolls. And, you know, I don't even really see Lou running as many pick and rolls for Blake as much as he is for somebody like DJ / Harrell / Willie Reed. So it's tough. It's kind of slim pickings right now, but it'll get better when we get players back, when Milos comes back and with Gallo coming back. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it for Twitter questions, actually. I'm not sure there's too much else to talk about. As you said earlier, I think the metal of this team will be really tested in the next week or two. I think we might know in 2 weeks if this team is making the playoffs or not. It might sound like hyperbole. I don't know if it is. If they go 1-6 or 1-7 and they don't win some of these easy games and they start getting blown out by good teams and Gallinari and Teodosic still aren't back yet, like, I think the trades will start slowly, if not happening, at least the substantiated rumors will happen. But, yeah, I think 2 or 3 weeks we'll have a much better idea of what this team is and where it's going. I don't really have that much else to talk about. We basically touched on everything. I think Doc has some interesting choices, like I said at the very beginning, regarding rotations in terms of Harrell versus Reed, Decker playing him more versus going small or big with Harrell and Reed, or going with three guards. He kind of develops a little bit because his passing and playmaking could be really valuable, even though right now he's pretty bad defensively and can't shoot. He has choices to make. I'm curious to see what he does. But, yeah, I think we covered just about everything, unless there's something you think we should go over.
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. If next week the Clippers are 10-11, we'll have more to talk about because they'll have beaten two teams ahead of them in the standings. The Lakers, incredibly, are one of those teams. So if they are 10-11 next week, then I think we can start thinking a little bit more about maybe making a playoff push. Obviously, it'll be easier said than done with the schedule that comes afterwards. And there's no such thing as a gimme with Gallo and Teodosic injured. But, you know, one game at a time, and we'll see how it goes. And hopefully this team is a bit more fun to watch. They've been fun to watch these last couple of games. So I think that'll do it for me and Rob in this episode of the Law of the Jab, the podcast. Thanks for listening. As always, leave us a good review if you can on iTunes. It helps a lot. And thanks for listening. Go Clippers!
Austin's thought about the three-ball.